Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We've got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Happy Friday, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Grace Curley Show. I am so thrilled that you are here. We've got a few big updates coming at you today, which we will get into in more detail over the next 3 hours, including something that didn't really surprise me this morning. Democrats came to Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House. They came to his rescue with this test vote on the foreign aid plan. Now, the $95 billion foreign aid plan, for people who haven't been able to read into it at all. I think all you have to know is that Chuck Schumer behind the scenes is bragging.
$1.7 trillion.
He's bragging to his fellow Democrats about how great this plan is for them. And also, which is just as important to politicians, it's not just how good it is for their side, it's how bad it is for the other side. That Republicans, the GOP, that we get nothing out of this foreign aid package. And of course, the thing people were hoping to get was a little bit of security on the border. That seems to be out the window. And the opposition party crossed the aisle today to help Speaker Johnson get the votes necessary to advance the legislation to the floor. Tomorrow, the four-part plan, and it's four parts, is one part aid for Ukraine, one part aid for Israel, one part aid for the Indo-Pacific, and then the other bill is kind of this national security thing that has to do with TikTok that I've heard, you know, mixed reviews on. That will all be considered tomorrow by House lawmakers. Whenever a Democrat is crossing over to, and I should use air quotes here, help a Republican, you should know you're getting screwed. And I guess you're probably sitting in your car saying, Grace, we're always getting screwed. That's nothing new. And that's true. But when both sides of the swamp are in harmony, even if it's for a brief moment, run for your lives. Things aren't good. Something is amiss. We'll keep you posted, though, on this, because Marjorie Taylor Greene's motion to vacate Johnson is pending. And earlier this week, Thomas Massie signed on to it. So we'll probably get more news on that today as well. I think you have to vote on it within 2 days or something. Meanwhile, big story. We talked about yesterday, we got more audio today, were the Hamas-loving protesters that were causing a ruckus at Columbia. Now, it started, you know, in the afternoon and it went into the night, some even getting arrested. I would say it was a riot, Jared, based off the footage I saw and the back and forth with the police. But I know that in order to deem something a riot, a dangerous riot, there would have to be at least one or two MAGA hats in the crowd. Somebody would have to have a Trump flag draped over their shoulders. And since I didn't see any of that, I'm going to say the safe bet is to call these peaceful protests. So we told you yesterday about these peaceful protests and how Ilhan Omar's daughter was suspended for her protesting. And, you know, she's the victim in all of this. Everyone who was arrested or suspended, they're the victims. You know, it's our fault that they chose, this is how they chose to spend their time. So some of these peace activists actually created an encampment at the school. I think it's safe to say most of the activists were students at the school. There was probably a handful of people who were just joining in who couldn't help themselves. But I think for the most part, this was an extracurricular activity for the students at Columbia. Gives you a real insight into what's going on at that school.
Terrorism club.
Yes. Yes, a lot of members, it appears. So this encampment that, you know, became quite popular throughout the course of the day, we got some audio from it, and I want you to take a listen. This is cut 10. This is a chant that started up with the pro-terrorist sit-in at Columbia.
We will honor all the martyrs.
We will honor all the martyrs.
All the children, sons, and daughters.
All the children, sons, and daughters.
That's what's going on in Joe Biden's America. And those are the voters that he's after. Those are the voters that he wants to make sure, you know, don't leave him in the dust. Which, by the way, that has to do with our poll question, because young voters are showing more support, according to recent polls. I think it was a Harvard poll, actually, for Donald J. Trump. Still, you know, Biden still beats him in a lot of categories, but it's not by nearly as much as it was the last time around. The last time around in 2020, Biden had this covered. He had this in the bank as far as young voters go. Not so much anymore. And I want to talk about why people think that is, because this is definitely a part of it, but I don't think it's as big of a part of it as the Democrats think. I don't think these groups of pro-terrorist peace activists, isn't that a beautiful, is a nice combination of words, these pro-terrorist peace activists, they're very passionate about their peace. I don't think that they represent as many young people as the Biden administration thinks they do. They're definitely the loudest, Jared. They're definitely the most into chanting. But I don't think they represent young people in this country. Maybe I'm just an optimist. Let's play the second chant. These are the pro-terrorist students at Columbia talking about how they've been. So now, you know, you go from... Oh, this is not a chant. Okay, I was going to say, it must be hard to talk about how you've been suspended via chant.
Yeah, they're talking to somebody walking around with a camera.
That'd be a long chant, wouldn't it, Jared? It'd be like Michael Scott when he describes the headline, Dunder Mifflin sells paper to the... They all go, that's a long headline. All right, let's take a listen to the terrorist students, pro-terrorist students at Columbia Cut 11.
We both just got emails from Barnard saying that we are interim suspended.
No.
And for what? What's the charge?
I mean, yesterday they came in, a few Barnard administrators came in and warned everybody saying that if we didn't disperse, they would, what was it?
That we would be interim
deactivate,
suspended.
They would deactivate our IDs by 9 p.m., which didn't happen. I was able to use my ID this morning, but I guess... It kicked in just now.
Guess they decided to go through with it, but
I thought they were bluffing, actually, because this morning when my ID worked, I was like, okay.
But you guys are still staying.
Oh no, we're gonna stay.
Yeah, we're staying.
Bro, they
can, like, expel me and I'll stay.
They can suspend every single one of us and we'll still be here.
They can put us in jail, we'll come back, pitch a tent again. Like,
yeah.
We're not leaving.
I heard this is also like the designated protest. Like, this is where people go to protest on campus.
Yeah, but we didn't book the designated demonstration zone, so.
So that warrants suspension?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bureaucracy. Wow.
You know how people always say, like, you are the future? That was something people would say to young people. You are the future. I think if I were to say it today, it would be more like, oh, you are the future. It's scary. It's scary.
God save the queen, man.
And these virtue signaling intellects, as you can tell by that audio, very intellectual people. These intellects were also telling the NYPD, not these ones specifically, but the groups of pro-terrorist chanters were telling the NYPD to kill themselves. Very peaceful. Again, we want to spread the love. We want to spread the joy. We want to spread the peace. I don't know how that, you know, helps in this matter. But something I was wondering, Jared, is I understand that there's a lot of young people who are taking out massive loans to go to a school like Columbia. But there are still a good amount of students out there whose parents pay for their college education. And I would guess that there's some of these students' parents are paying for their college education. And I would guess that there's probably a segment of these protesters whose parents are semi, and I'm using it loosely here, semi-normal people, probably libs, probably Democrats, but semi-normal people who are paying a big chunk of change for their kids to go to this school. And I don't care how many Joe Biden stickers you got. I don't care, you know, how many times you voted for Elizabeth Warren or Jerry Nadler or, like, whatever state you live in. If you're paying a good deal of your life savings to send your kid to school and you find out this is what they're up to, chanting, we honor the martyrs, telling NYPD officers to kill themselves, and getting suspended from school and then whining about it. My first call, if I were that parent, I would call them up and I would say, heads up, you know how your key card doesn't work? Well, don't worry about it because I'm not paying the tuition anymore. So that's not going to work either. So you might as well pack it up. You might as well pack it up and figure something else out because I'm not paying for this. And I understand that there's some of them are just, you know, they're getting a free ride from the taxpayers and we'll end up paying for all of it. And we really have no out. But for the parents who are writing a check every semester or every year for this, I would be enraged. I'd be like, this is what you're doing? For God's sakes. Is there not like a party you can go to? Is there not something you can study for? You got to sit in an encampment and start chanting, "We honor the martyrs." What? And you know, my next thing would be, what did I do wrong? Where did I go wrong? What happened? How did we get here? Because I'm thinking about that as a whole country. You know, how do we get here? But specifically these parents, they must, unless they're really on board, unless it's like SBF's parents and they're going, "I'm so proud of you. Great job." Which is probably part of the problem. This is probably encouraged by a lot of these parents. 844-500-4242. Also in the news today, and we'll talk to Ari Hoffman about this situation in the 1 o'clock. But also in the news, juror selection is just dominating the headlines. Karen Reed and Donald Trump's respective cases, as of right now, both only have 12 jurors. This is a very, very tricky process in both of these cases because it's so sensationalized that it's hard to get people who aren't biased in one way or another. But the weird, the scary thing about Trump is that when you look at these jurors, they're finding out that a lot of the jurors aren't being honest and they're trying to get on the jury and appear as though, you know, they're lying about their backstories or their histories in order to get on the jury and to be able to be part of this case, which is very, very concerning for Donald Trump, especially considering he's already in, as David Marcus described it, sapphire blue Manhattan. So his chances are already slim, and I'm sure they're not getting any better with people lying about their backgrounds and, you know, their own biases. 844-500-4242. We'll talk about that. Maggie Haberman put out, she was the first one who told us about Donald Trump supposedly sleeping in court. And she wrote something about how she was shocked, or the most stunning part of this is how biased people are, or how, you know, all of these, I should read the actual thing. It's the most stunning part is that it says one thing that has been striking during this round of voir dire, that's when they question the jurors and it's juror selection basically, is there are a lot of people, this is striking to Maggie Haberman, there are a lot of people who based on their answers are more left of center than not. Politically.
I mean, for a straight down the middle balls and strikes news person like Maggie Haberman, I'm sure this is completely out of the norm.
Yeah, she's like, everyone's not as good at being, you know, just totally objective as I am. They should really put me on this case because I'm able to see things clearly. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls. There's so much to get to. There's so much sound. Biden's been in Pennsylvania. It feels like he's been in Pennsylvania for 6 years. He's just constantly going. Now he's like on a tour of the Wawas, of the empty Wawas is the better way to describe it. We'll talk about that. We'll play some sound. We'll take your calls. But get on the line now. I want to talk about these protesters, or as Jake Novak said, urban terrorists who are taking over the schools, the highways, sometimes theater performances, sometimes concerts, sometimes Catholic masses, and what it means for the country as a whole. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Today's poll question is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is what issue do you think voters care the most about?
Young voters.
The economy, student loan debt, the Middle East, abortion, climate change, or illegal immigration?
Now, of course, I have to use anecdotal evidence here. Okay, so I'm only going based off people I've talked to. My sister's Gen Z, my younger brother, I think he's Gen Z. I consider myself a fairly young voter. I'm 31. And I would say, based off that anecdotal evidence, I'm going to say the economy.
The economy is in the lead right now at 26%, 24% for illegal immigration, 23% for climate change, 19% for student loan debt, 7% for abortion, which surprises me, and 1% for the Middle East.
Yeah, that surprised me too. Emma said she thought that was going to be higher up.
That's
that
always
her...
a big issue for the youngins.
Yeah, we'll go back to this and talk about the polls regarding young people turning out for Donald Trump, something that I'm sure has the Biden administration in full meltdown mode per usual. But let's go to the callers here. Peggy, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Peggy?
Hi, Grace. I have a question for you. I don't know if you know the answer, but it's a really good question. Where, oh, where is Christopher Wray in the FBI, and why hasn't the FBI stepped in to these peaceful protests? They only seem to investigate, prosecute, and sentence conservatives. I think this upheaval of campuses, et cetera, with, you know, plants and terror, you know, who knows who's in these mixes of people. I think they should be investigated, and we hear nothing from him. He is awful.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. He's either in the Adirondacks or he's busy prosecuting Catholics going to Latin masses, or, you know, pro-lifers who are trying to convince women that there's another alternative to aborting their children. He is nowhere to be seen right now. And even if he were anywhere to be seen, even if he did speak out about this, Peggy, he couldn't tell you much. He couldn't jeopardize sources and methods. But that overall takeaway is so important because it brings us back to things like the FISA court. It brings us back to, in a weird way, things like the Crumbly parents. And I'll tell you why. Because the Crumbly parents, the parents of the mass shooter in Michigan, terrible, terrible parents. There's no doubt about that. But the reason conservatives are hesitant to create these new precedents where you can jail people for being bad parents, or you can jail, is because exactly what Peggy said. We know that all of these laws, all of these agencies are only used one way. If the law was applied equally to everyone, I would have no issue with a lot of these things, a lot of these great ideas. But I know it's not. I know it's not. And we were talking about the law being equally applied just the other day because, Peggy, the Supreme Court was hearing oral arguments. It's Fisher versus the United States about the January 6th riots and the statute of obstruction, which is typically only used in financial criminal cases. And Judge Justice Gorsuch asked the Solicitor General, why can this be applied here, but it's not being applied to, say, a Jamal Bowman who pulls the alarm, the fire alarm, and obstructs Congress? Why isn't it being used for people who sit in Congress and stop proceedings? And her answer was basically, Peggy, oh, no, no, no. We're not going to apply it to those people because they're not Trump people. We're not going to apply it to those people. They're not conservatives. Don't worry, Gorsuch. We're not going to evenly apply this law to everyone. It's only going to be used for the political group we don't like. 844-500-4242. When the phone don't ring, is how he says, it's Christopher Wray. We'll be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
We have people on the lines who want to talk about these Columbia rioters who were chanting, "We are all Hamas," and, you know, "We honor the martyrs," and all sorts of very disturbing things. But, you know, disturbing but not surprising, Jared, because we've seen this playing out now at so many different schools across this country, very expensive schools. So to all the parents out there, if you see your kid, imagine turning on Fox and seeing your kid at the encampment at Columbia explaining to a reporter how, yeah, they suspended us. We thought they were bluffing, but they actually did. I'd be on the phone with my child. very quickly. 844-500-4242. And we will take calls on this, but something else I want to let people know is open for discussion is this juror process with Donald Trump and really these cases that he's dealing with in New York. Because I read something today, and it was in Politico, and it was in their West Wing playbook, which I read just because they have this section in Politico that says what the White House wants you to read. And sometimes I click on that because it's a funny puff piece by like Jennifer Rubin that I think you guys might get a kick out of. But what I really go for is the section they have that's titled what the White House doesn't want you to read. And that's usually a tiny, some rare piece of honest journalism about all the things that are going wrong. And in that whole section on West Wing Playbook, they have this paragraph about how they think that the case against Trump in New York City, let me read you this. It says, the images of former President Donald Trump in court has been a great look for the Biden camp. I disagree for so many reasons, and I'm taking my own bias and how much I can't stand Joe Biden out of it for a second. I really disagree with this, though, because I think people are almost, they're relating to him a little bit here. They're relating to this fact that the cards are stacked against him and that, you know, he's having to go to these trials and he's having to speak to reporters and he's not really able to do a traditional campaign, but he still seems to be doing more than Joe Biden. And that was the other thing. Joe Biden, when he was in Pennsylvania, he said something along the lines of, well, you know, my opponent who's very busy. That was like a big laugh line. And I thought, well, first of all, nobody is less busy than Joe Biden. If you've looked at his public schedule, depending on the day, there might be one thing scheduled, like, oh, lunch with Kamala or get the PDB. But it's a very, very light schedule for Joe Biden. I don't think that's something you want to brag about. I don't think you should be boasting about the fact that, well, the person I'm running against is very busy because I've weaponized the legal system against them. And they have to go to court all the time instead of, for example, their son's high school graduation. But I have so much time on my hands while the country burns. I can be at this Wawa talking about milkshakes. And by the way, the Wawa he was at, sorry, it's Friday, guys. I got to try to cram it all in here. The Wawa he was at looked like it had just gone through a zombie apocalypse. There wasn't any humans in there. There was two other human beings in there besides him.
Well, it's Philadelphia, which right now is basically a zombie apocalypse.
Very true.
Seen the
very
videos.
True. Very true. That could explain it. Lou, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, how you doing, Grace? Before I get to my point, is that you know, Trump looked better at that bodega in New York City than Biden looked on his campaign trail. Trump is really making hay and connecting with people like Darren in the milkshake place the other day, and I think that makes Biden look even worse because Trump looks vigorous and actually connecting with real people. But anyway, well, the point I wanted to make was is that I've seen this before. I'm old enough to have seen this before back with the Weathermen and the Black Panthers back in the 1970s. And as you know, like Bernadette Dorn and Bill Ayers, the mentors of Obama, made their mark by being these radical weather people. And like bombing police stations and doing all kinds of other radical stuff and robberies and things. So, you know, these are the mentors of today's liberals. The weathermen back then are now, they become college professors and lawyers and stuff. They're the mentors of today's liberals, like the Obamas, for example, and Bidens. And that's why all these college professors are so reluctant to go after them, because they honor the people of the past who used to do the same kind of crap. Now, and so that's their pedigree. The pedigree is the leftists of the 70s for the college professors, and now they're seeing the same thing replay here with going now siding with the Hamas martyrs, so to speak. And
yeah,
Lou,
I was just going to say that, you know, at one point we had a conversation about who's actually nuttier, because sometimes you think, wow, you know, these students are taking over the schools and, you know, they're chanting, we honor the martyrs and all these things. But you're right. The professors that are teaching these students and in some cases indoctrinating them. But I'll be honest, by the time you get to college, the indoctrination starts a lot younger now than it did when I was in school. Like people were slanted left when I was in school and when I was in high school, too. But I have to say, I went to a liberal, I would call it liberal. It wasn't religious. It was a private school in New England. And I have to say, I'm sure the teachers were liberal, most of them. But I never knew it. Like, it was never a discussion. We really did. We talked about history and we talked about biology and we really did go to school and we learned stuff. And the teachers were great. Like, I had such wonderful high school teachers. And it wasn't this indoctrination of an ideology. And the sense I get now is that this is happening like K through 12. So by the time they get to these schools, they don't need any guidance from these professors on how to be crazy. It's already built in. And the other thing I would say, Lou, is in a lot of cases, like the professor, Jared, and I can't remember what school she taught at, but the New York Post had the video of her tipping over the table for the pro-life activists. And she went completely crazy. And then when a New York Post reporter came to interview her later, she held a machete up to his neck. So these professors, in a lot of cases, are just as nutty, if not more so, than the students. But go ahead, Lou, finish your thought.
Yeah, one thing I noticed, I don't notice this happening in Florida or many red states. Do you? Any of these actions or the blocking the bridges? I think it would end right away in Florida, and I think they'd be arrested and get be thrown in jail and maybe even actually convicted of something in a red state like Florida, as opposed to New York, where the administration and the DAs and the governor and everything and the college presidents are all sympathetic with them. They're all sympathetic with them because that's what they grew up with. And you're right about the K through 12 thing, is that they're now teaching kids to hate America with CRT from a very young age. And then they grow up into this and say, yeah, America stinks, Israel's bad, but they never learn about the other side, about how they live in Iran or how they live in the Palestine states or in any of these other radicalized states. They don't learn that because they just think America's bad.
That's a good point, Lou, about, and I've always found this to be like the missing piece when it comes to this conversation we have about curriculums and about what we teach the younger kids in schools. And there seems to be this misconception on the left that the right is trying to whitewash things or trying to erase any mistakes we've made in U.S. history. And I can tell you right now that and Jared, you can speak to this too, because you're a different generation than I am. We learned about slavery. We learned about bad things that America did or bad things that presidents had done. We learned about all of that. But the difference is that we were always aware of the fact that as much as America was not perfect, it was leaps and bounds beyond every other place on Earth. And it was extremely unique, and that we were always striving to be better. And we had made such strides throughout the course since America began. And I think that's a part of it that isn't talked about now. And so this idea from the left is, oh, you guys want to pretend that America's never made mistakes. That was never the MO when I was in school. It was never to say, oh, everything's always been wonderful and we're number one. We're number one. No, it was, let's talk about history. Let's learn from it. Let's talk about, you know, America's history, warts and all. But we did talk about the founding fathers. We did talk about the Constitution. We did talk about how they were so wise in their knowledge about human nature and about predicting where things might go wrong in the future and how we could preserve this republic. And I think that you can have both. You can talk about what's gone wrong in the past so that you don't do it again in the future without missing this major part of our story, which is you should be grateful to be here. I mean, Gary Player was just saying it at the Masters, like and he's from South Africa. You should kiss the ground and be happy to be here, because let me assure you that if you're chanting death to another country in that country, if you're chanting death to Gaza when you're there, you're not going to be able to do that. You're not going to be getting interviewed by a reporter on the street about your thoughts and your opinions and your suspension from the school. Things are going to be a lot different. And so you have every right to, you know, be an idiot, as Joe Biden would say. But that doesn't translate in other countries. You don't have that in other countries. When you were in school, Jared, was it all America's great all the time?
No, it wasn't that America's great all the time, but the teachers, I feel, didn't have an agenda. So they gave a more factual fair-minded lesson in the classroom. And I did not learn civics in school by that time. Social studies had replaced civics. Learned a little bit about the Bill of Rights and, you know, things like that. But generally, you didn't get any of the slant. It wasn't, you know, so George Washington was the general in the U.S. Army, first president of the United States. Yes, slavery existed at the time. It didn't define his existence. Whereas today, it's George Washington, slave owner, horrible human being, founded America so that we could keep slaves. That's
there's
the 1619 project, I guess.
There's a stand-up by my favorite comedian, Nate Bargatze, and he talks about how he said something about George Washington or some, you know, statue near his house, and somebody said to him, he's a really bad guy. He was a really bad guy. And he looked at the person and said, I didn't know him. I never met him, so I can't speak to that. But you're right, Jared. There wasn't this, it wasn't all race-obsessed, which it completely is now. And you know what's the crazy part? And we've kind of gone on a tangent here. But what strikes me about Americans right now is there's a lot of people who have this idea or this perception that if they were back in the days of slavery, that they would be like the person, they would be the one person. And everybody thinks that. Everybody thinks, well, I wouldn't have put up with it. I would have protested. And that's great that, you know, you think that if you were plopped in there, you would have done something differently. But for the most part, a lot of people were on board with it at the time. It was, you know, people didn't know really anything different. And the reason I bring this up is because people also feel that same way about the Holocaust and the way Jews were treated, the way the Nazis treated Jews and were, you know, this genocide of the Jewish people. A lot of people feel like, well, if I was around there, if I was in Germany at that time, I would have been the one to say, hey, this isn't right. This is bad. And we have all these movies now, Jared. Like, we're obsessed with these movies. Brad Pitt's in them, you know, these big celebrities who take it to the Nazis and they take them down and everybody thinks, yeah, that's who I would be. I'd be that guy with the Uzi taking on the Nazis. And if the last year has taught us anything, it's that not a lot of people would be, actually. Based off what I'm seeing at these schools, I don't think you all would be as wonderful in these moments in history as you think you'd be. And you know what we should go back to? You know, where's John Meacham with the history books? What are the history books going to say about the people chanting death to America? I'm just curious, because when it came to Donald Trump, when it came to the January 6th, when it came to the phone call, the perfectly good phone call, when it came to Russia, which is now rearing its ugly head, I was told over and over and over again that the history books would not be kind, and what the historians would write would send a shiver down your spine. Any word on that? Are the history books not being written right now, Jared? Are they on pause like all the fact checkers? All the history book writers are on vacation?
Yeah, they're just waiting to see how everything plays out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And then they'll give their take. 844-500-4242. Thank you for the call. We'll be right back. We'll take more of your calls when we return. Didn't mean to go down that road, but interesting conversation. You know, people are always focused on what's being taught in schools nowadays. And I think that definitely has to do with what we're seeing at Columbia, what we're seeing in all these Ivy League schools. And they, you know, they can try, like the president was, you know, in this hearing, they can try to distance themselves from this as much as they want, but I think that's becoming increasingly more difficult. I will say, I do find it amusing that, you know, the squad members are very anti-Semitic. They, you know, Rashida Tlaib will promote propaganda from Hamas, from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. Ilhan Omar will say that it's all about the Benjamin. Like, they've been pretty outspoken and transparent about their anti-Semitism. But even so, I can totally picture them seeing these protests where the kids are going, we are all Hamas, and saying, guys, you gotta be a little bit more subtle than that. We can't be saying we're Hamas. I mean, it's cool. We're on board, but just try to hide it a little bit better. And that's, ironically enough, what a lot of the Obama era people were thinking about squad members at the time. Remember Obama was saying, like, you know, He didn't say this exactly, but he was essentially saying, you can't come out and say all this stuff. You got to hide it a little bit better. You can't be so obvious about your agenda. That was the Obama era officials with the squad members. And now the squad members are probably looking at these protesters and going, just don't say you're Hamas. You can say everything else, from the river to the sea. You know, we honor the martyrs. You can say everything else, but don't say we're Hamas. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Did retaliate earlier today with limited attacks on an area where one of Iran's nuclear facilities is located. We're going to talk to Ari Hoffman about it in the next hour, but we've got a lot of people on the lines who want to chat. So let's go to James. You're next up on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, James?
Hey, Grace. Thanks for taking my call. I actually kind of had 2 points, but I'll make the first one that I mentioned when I called in. And if you want to let me make the second one, that's up to you. But what you were just talking about was where do we think, you know, we would be if we were alive, you know, during the Holocaust in Germany. And I think another example that's a really good one that makes the point is the vaccination situation with the pandemic of the unvaccinated and how you couldn't go anywhere, you know, the othering. And, you know, obviously the Germans' argument with, or, you know, to other the Jews was that they brought disease and pestilence and all these other types of things, and they were unclean, whatever. And so they did that with the unvaccinated here. You couldn't get a transplant if you weren't vaccinated. You couldn't go anywhere. People were wishing, you know, you couldn't go to the hospital, you know, all that stuff. So that was my first point.
Yeah, James, I call back in for your second one just because we're going to run out of time here. But that's a good first point. And you know what it made me think of is the woman from Disney who actually put up a photo and put up a meme that was kind of trying to relay that same point. And she was fired from the show The Mandolin. Is that what it's called?
The Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian.
Gina Carano.
Yeah, and she was fired for making a similar point, James. We'll be right back with Ari Hoffman. Thank you for the call.